Good evening, everyone. It's nice to see a good number along this evening. We trust the Lord will bless our time together. We certainly did enjoy our time of fellowship here at the Assembly at Boulevard Bible Chapel. We enjoyed the hospitality of our brother and sister David and Nancy with their three children. Now this evening I want to just, before we get into the slides and before we start talking about Botswana, I want to read a couple of verses with you from the book of Philippians. Book of Philippians. I want to bring our attention to a preposition of this verse. The little word in. Philippians chapter 1. Verse 3, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. I want to draw your attention to verse 6 in particular, and that phrase, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Turn over to chapter 2. Verse 12. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Again, I want to draw your attention to the preposition in of verse 13. For it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. We trust the Lord will bless his word to us this evening. Now, we're going to refer to these verses in a little while, but before we get into that, I want to just remind you that we come from Canada, and in fact, some people have asked where my wife is from. My wife actually has a very interesting testimony, and she should someday be able to tell you what it is. She's a Mohawk Indian, and she was raised on a reserve in Canada. She came of a family of 12. There were 10 children, and the family was unfit to care for these children. And all 10 of the children had to be taken out of the home, and my wife with two of her siblings, one on each side of her, were taken and brought to a Christian home. And this loving family brought these three girls into their home and two others as well. And they were in Assembly Fellowship in Brantford, Ontario. And all five of the daughters have trusted in the Lord and have gone on to know and serve Him. So the Lord had a special way of bringing my wife out of that situation and bringing her to the Lord. Now, she went to her nursing college after high school, and her first post was in Dawson Creek, British Columbia. Anyone heard of that place before? Not Dawson's Creek, as you may have seen on TV. This is mile zero of the Alaska Highway up in northern British Columbia. And there was a little assembly there, and that's where she was posted. That was her first posting. Now, I was in the shoe business, and those of you who are here this morning heard how I trusted the Lord, and as my brother shared the gospel with me. Now, after I graduated, I went to go back to British Columbia, to Vancouver, where I met the Lord, and I came into fellowship in some assemblies there. And the type of business that I was involved in required that I be transferred around to a number of places. And I was transferred to a place called Fort St. John, which is about mile 40 on the Alaska Highway. And the assembly was in Dawson Creek, 40 miles away, and so I commuted on the weekends when I met the believers. And that November one year, there was this young lady, and by October the following year, we were married. And so the rest is history. Of course, we've got three good-looking boys, and one of them is with us this evening. Ever since my wife and I met, we felt before the Lord that He was going to call us into missionary service. We didn't know whether it be India, Turkey, or Africa. We had no idea where we'd go. Maybe perhaps it was going to be North America. But we made it our business to be exercised about serving the Lord. And we eventually got our boys, and then we had, of course, we got a mortgage and another mortgage, and we got a car loan. And it wasn't long before I was up to my neck in responsibilities, and the mission field seemed something far away. Then one time, one of the elders, I was in another assembly by this time, and one of the elders came to me, and he asked me if I'd ever given any thought to serving the Lord as a missionary. And I said, "Oh, brother, I would love to have done that. But," I said, "I can't see myself going now." I says, "Look, I've got all these responsibilities here, and I can't see that happening." And he said, "Well, I just thought I'd mention it." Now, little did he know that what he'd done he raised that concern once again in my heart. And the Lord just seemed to use him to bring with conviction the calling of God on our life to serve Him as missionaries. And as time proceeded, we could not seem to get this idea out of our minds. And eventually, we, through a number of different circumstances, the Lord made it very clear that we were to go to a country called Botswana. Now, many people have never heard of Botswana before. It's a lovely little country, sparsely populated, a very peaceful place. It's one of the most developed countries in Southern Africa, one of the most peaceful places. It has the largest diamond mine in the world in the center of the Kalahari Desert. There was a movie that was produced a number of years ago called The Gods Must Be Crazy. It was a movie about the bushmen of the Kalahari Desert. Well, that's what these people were like. This is what the Kalahari Desert was like. Now, in November of 1991, we were commended by an assembly in Ontario to serve the Lord in Botswana. And we arrived in the capital city of Botswana called Habaroni. And we joined with a couple that were in that serving the Lord there by the names of Dr. Clark and Hazel Logan. They were commended from an assembly from Belfast, Northern Ireland. And there they were serving the Lord. He was a medical doctor. She was a nurse. And they were offering their services free to the nation and helping where they could. And they were very faithful in preaching the gospel. And they saw a nice assembly established in the capital city. And we linked with them. And they were very kind to help us with the language and with the culture. And they helped us adjust to life on that side of the world. And one of the things that I remember doing before we left, and I think one of our brethren this evening was just talking about going to Mexico, and he's been jabbed several times with needles in order to prepare him for that. Well, I did the same thing. I had all sorts of needles. Now, one of the things that we didn't get was a TB inoculation. And when we arrived in the capital city, Hazel Logan, who was a nurse, he says, "No, you should have an inoculation for TB." So we were injected by her, and I still remember chasing Jonathan all around the room, the house, to get him and give him his injection. And we thought everything was fine, and we carried on for 6 months, and we were learning the language. I preached my first message in Setswana. It was very short, and we started to develop in the culture. And it was springtime in 1992, Easter time. And I started to feel a little bit sick, and I had a sinus infection, and I had something like a flu, and I was laid up in the bed. And as the custom is in Africa, when someone is sick, visiting the sick is very important. And you will find that in a lot of these developing countries, when people are sick, visiting is very important. And some of the African friends who were living behind our house came in to visit me. And one of the gentlemen that came in to visit me was a man who had TB. And he came into the room, and we spoke for a little while, and then he left. Now, little did he know, and little did I know at the time, that the TB bacilli was passed from him to myself. And normally what happens with TB bacilli is you breathe it in, and it becomes a pulmonary tuberculosis, and that is the common way it presents itself, and it is normally treated with different types of medicine. Now, in the situation that I was, is I had a sinus infection, and I breathed in the bacilli, and instead of it going into my lungs, it went into the infected sinuses and passed from there to the meninges, which is the lining around your brain and your spinal cord. And in a very short time, I developed TB meningitis. Now, nobody knew what it was at the time, but I became very ill. And eventually, what I remember happening, the last thing I remember was I had such terrible pains in my back and in my legs, and the headache was incredible. And the only way that I could get some relief was to have a hot bath. Now, we had no electricity, and we did have running water. And so my wife lit some paraffin lamps, these storm lamps, and she helped me into the bathtub. She had to heat water on a stove in order to make it warm, and she made the bath warm, the water warm, and the pain started to go away. And eventually the pain started to come back again, and it was now 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and my wife was really at wit's end as to know what to do. And so she said, well, I'm going to phone Dr. Logan and try and see if he can help us. And she said, before I do that, let's try and get you back into the bed. And I tried to move my legs, and I couldn't move my legs whatsoever. They were not functioning. And I remember my wife, she laid a blanket or a mat down on the floor, and I lifted myself up onto the edge of the tub, and then I fell onto that mat. And then she dragged the mat, and I helped with my arms, but my legs were not working. And eventually, I got back into the bed, and that was the last thing I remember. I woke up about 4 days later in Johannesburg, and I didn't know exactly all what had happened, but apparently I'd been already in one hospital in Botswana. They did the best they could. They pumped me with all the antibiotics they could do. They didn't have a CT, a CAT scan machine, or an MRI, so they had to air ambulance me to Johannesburg, and that's where they could see that there was a serious problem. They couldn't identify that it was TB meningitis because it takes quite a while for that to grow, that culture to grow, but they took a shot in the dark, and they began to treat me as if I had TB meningitis, and I almost immediately began to respond to the medication. And so I woke up. But I was very, very weak. In those 4 or 5 days, or probably a few days before that, I had lost over 40 pounds, and mostly from my legs. And I had no strength whatsoever. I couldn't feed myself. I was completely weakened and paralyzed from the waist down. Now, finally the time came, and we had some of our brethren from Botswana. They came down to visit us. I don't think we fully appreciated the immensity of this problem. We didn't understand how serious this was. And it was really our brethren in Botswana that were able to make it known to us that this is a life-threatening sickness. You need to go back home. Now tell me, how would you feel? 6 months on the mission field, I hadn't done anything. I barely preached my first message in Setswana. And I'll be coming home on a stretcher. And I often thought, this wasn't right. I was going there as a missionary. I wanted to see souls saved. I wanted to see assemblies planted. I wanted to see God really working through me. And then these verses that we've just read this evening came to my mind. It is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Being confident of this very thing, that it is God which worketh in you. And as I began to think about that, it's God that's working in me. And I had to come to the understanding that God was far more interested in the work that he was going to accomplish in me than the work that he was going to do through me. And I think if every one of us appreciated that wonderful fact, it would help us to concentrate on the real business, and that is what God is doing in my life. How is He changing me? Am I representing, am I communicating the character of Christ in my life to others? And once I began to lay hold of that, it helped me to understand that this was really a preparation for future service. These were some of the things that God needed to equip me with. He needed to qualify me this for the type of ministry that I was to carry out. And these were lessons that we had to learn. Now, we did not know what was going to happen, but my wife and I were of the conviction that we would be returning, and we were the only ones that felt that way. Now, we arrived back in Canada. The ambulance met us at the airport and took us to the hospital in Toronto, and there was a neurologist there that was jumping for joy because this was the first living specimen of a TB meningitis patient he had to experiment with. And so there I was, and he was amazed at some of the recovery that was going on. And there were people praying, and there were people praying in this place, I understand, that way back then in 1992, that there were believers all around praying. We got letters from all over the world, people that were praying for us. And I'll never forget what it was like to be in that hospital. I at first was in isolation, and once I was out of isolation, we had visitors coming to visit us. Now, I had my own private nurse, and she had been taking care of me while I was in isolation. And all of a sudden, I'm not in isolation. And in Toronto, there's 200 assemblies within a two-hour radius. And there were a number of believers that were coming to visit us. In fact, they were lined up out the door. And the nurse, she finally stopped the line and came in and looked at me in the face and says, "Who are you?" It was wonderful to realize that I was part of the great family of God. And that there were believers that were praying, you know, for me. And I just was able to tell them, these are my brothers and sisters in the Lord. And they're here to share with me. And it was a tremendous experience to see how the Lord was working. And there was recovery. And I remember the first time I was able to move my big toe. I was able to wiggle it. And I said to the doctors, I invited them to come and see. And I showed them. They said, "Well, don't get excited. You're not going to walk again." That was what they told me. Now, there were all sorts of things that went wrong, and I would take all evening to tell you, but I had, you know, the neurological problems affected my bladder as well as bowels and all these sorts of things. Most humiliating when you think about it. And you know, I was so dependent now on my wife and dependent on others. I was healthy and strong and in the past and never had to worry about these things. But this was now an experience that God was bringing me through. Now, we went through a lot of recovery, a lot of rehabilitation, and I remember the one hospital that we were in for 3 months after I had passed through all the medication, and then now I had to go to a special rehab hospital that was dedicated to helping spinal cord injured patients. And I remember after being there for 3 months, I was about to be released with two other patients, and these two other patients and myself, we decided to go out for dinner as a celebration. We're going to be released, And we both had all three of us had walking sticks, you know. And we came into the restaurant. People were clearing chairs out of the way left and right as we walked into the restaurant. We ordered our meal. And it was a tremendous thing when I came back. Now, this was something that I wouldn't normally share with believers. And I just want to let you know how the Lord was doing. For 5 months, my bladder was dead. I had to use a catheter every 6 hours. For 5 months, there was nothing happening. The urologist didn't ever believe that anything would work again. Coming into that hospital again that evening from the restaurant, they had these doors that open up automatically when they sense a wheelchair or somebody coming up, and opened up, and I felt something strange down here, and I went upstairs to check myself, and I had wet myself. Now, that's good news, folks. This is for someone who hadn't been working for 5 months. Not too many grown men are happy about this, but I was real thrilled that I had had an accident. And it was the beginning that things were starting to recover, to heal. And we just thank the Lord that there's all these different things that the Lord managed to restore to me. Now, to make a long story short, November 1993, after 18 months of physiotherapy, we went back to Botswana.
Now, have you ever seen a welcoming committee like this? I'll tell you. You see, when those Africans, they saw me take off in the airplane, the big, rich, white missionary going back to his land, they thought, we'll never see him again. And we came back. And Clark Logan, he drove me to the meeting. It was a Thursday evening. And I got out of the truck, and I was literally knocked to the ground by these African believers who were so thrilled that we were able to come back and that their prayers were answered as well as our own. So we spent another 6 months in Habaroni, continued with our language lessons, and the time came that Karen and I felt that we were exercised about a village up in the northern part of the country called Maun, M-A-U-N, Maun. It was a place that was basically had been unreached. There was not much gospel testimony there, and we wanted to see an assembly started. So we went up there and bought a piece of land, and we started to build our house. And while the house was being built, the neighbors were watching what we were doing, and the children were coming, and so we started a little Sunday school under the shade of a tree, and the workers would come on a Sunday, and we started to have a regular gospel meeting and Sunday school in our backyard under the shade of a tree. As the house came to the point where we could live inside, we all moved inside the living room, dining room area, and that became the meeting area. And after about a year of preaching, the Lord gave us just a handful of souls, and we felt the time had come to start to remember the Lord as an assembly. And so we started with a small number, and that was in 1995. In fact, this month is a 10-year anniversary of the assembly in Maun. Now, we started very small, and eventually what we did is we built a temporary chapel on a corner of the plot of land where we built our house. And that eventually had to be moved, and what the assembly did is buy its own plot. And we moved the plot of land to that area there. And now we are planning to build a proper Bible chapel in the days to come. Now, the assembly work has basically been started as a children's work. All the assemblies in Botswana, there are six now, every one of them started as a children's work, and these assemblies developed, and their Sunday schools are fantastic. We have a small Sunday school, by African standards. We're only 100 kids in ours. But for example, Sorowe Assembly, it was the first assembly that was established in the country. There's about 40 believers in fellowship. They have a Sunday school of over 1,200 children. And you can imagine the size of the Sunday school classes. Now, I think I've spoken long enough. And what I'm going to do is we're going to go into the slides. I'm going to just speak about some of these slides rather quickly to make sure we've made the best use of the time. And then afterwards, we're just going to make you a few prayer requests. Just ask that our lights be turned down. Now, quite often people ask where Botswana is, and as you can see from our map this evening, that Botswana is a landlocked country. Yeah, come on up front if the children want to see better pictures here. It's a landlocked country. We are surrounded by a number of countries that are quite famous, like Mugabe, Zimbabwe, and South Africa, and Angola, and a number of missionaries over the years in Angola and Zambia. But Botswana has been relatively overlooked because of its harsh weather conditions, a very hot, dry country. But up in the north part of the country, in the village where we live, it is quite lush. There is a swamp there, and you'll see some of the pictures of that in a moment or two. Just focus that a bit, will you? Now, this is a family that we work with. That's better, yeah. This man's name is Dan Ngaluka and his family there. Dan and myself, we share the responsibility of the oversight. Let's focus it a bit better, son. That's better. We share the responsibility of the assembly, and you can see in the background just a little bit of what the chapel looks like. Now, while we are here on furlough, we invited Joe and Ramona Marquez, who are missionaries in Paraguay. They are home indefinitely because of some of the sickness that Joe has faced. But they were healthy enough to come out to Botswana, and they are in our home right now and helping out in the Lord's work in Botswana. So this is just a little bit of what the neighborhood looks like. These are some children that are next door that often are entertained by what we're doing. Now there's a tribe in Botswana called Baharero. These are people that have come over from Namibia when there was a war in Namibia some years ago. Now these people have been taught to dress this way by the German missionaries about 150 years ago and haven't received further instruction since then. They have just carried on dressing up this way. Now Botswana is a country of new and old. Now you can see here that we have some modern facilities, but here's a good picture to show you the new and the old. A mud hut with a satellite dish on the side of it. And this is often what you see throughout the country. You can have something like this, and then you can have a Mercedes-Benz. We've got lots of modern vehicles and modern appliances, and yet there's a lot of very primitive things going on. Now, throughout the village, you have these little places where people can get water for their cooking and bathing needs, and so every morning and evening, the young ladies will come out here and get water. Now, here is a real interesting way of building your home. You build it out of tin cans and dung, cow dung, and mud. And this person here didn't get the roof on before the rains came, and it just completely washed away his wall, so he'll have to start over. Now, this is an idea here where you can see the new and the old coming together. There's a shop across the street called ShopRite, where you can buy a lot of really normal Western good food that we would appreciate. And then on this side of town, you can see there's a barber shop, somewhat more primitive. Now I'm just buying some dried caterpillars there that we normally would like to bring to on when we come home on furlough, so people can taste them. But we unfortunately didn't manage to get any this time. They were out of season. But there you can see what they look like. And these are actually caterpillars that grow that eat on the mopani trees, and they pluck them and then just squeeze the guts out a little bit, and then they just dry them in the sun, and then they're just eaten like a snack, or you can warm them up. Now this is a meat tree. This is meat that is sold quite cheaply. Quite often this would be meat that has been confiscated from poachers. It could be wild game. And sometimes a cow will get knocked down on the road and it will be brought over here and butchered. This is a traditional drink. It's called madila. It's milk that has been put in the skin of a goat and let it go off as it sits in the sun, and then it gets to this state here. AIDS is a big problem in the country, as you can see by this sign. They are just trying to encourage people to follow the ABCs of prevention with this sign. But sadly, the country has gone pretty much just the same as it always has, and we have a very high rate of AIDS prevalence in the country. We are about, right across the nation, about 50%. And the Guinness Book of World Records has Botswana in there for having the shortest life expectancy for people. It's 37.2 years old, I think, is when most people die. Now, this is the opposition. This is one of the spiritual healing churches, we would call them. And these people here that would meet in a little church like this would embrace animistic beliefs mixed with Christian beliefs. So you've got people who would dress up like this. There she's got a cross, and they might have a hymn book or maybe even a Bible. And they have just come from a church that perhaps just had an animal sacrifice. And these people would march around the fire singing Amazing Grace and carrying their Bibles all at the same time. You get some young men like this who feel that like Moses and Aaron, they each had a stick. So these fellas got sticks and a uniform. And if you ask these fellas if they're Christians, they would say, yes, we're Christians. Can't you see our uniform? And they have no idea really what it means to have their faith in the Lord Jesus. This is another group. This is probably the biggest group, called the ZCC, Zionist Christian Church. But they have all sorts of really evil ways that go along with their services. Now, this is the little chapel that we are now dismantling and taking it from our home plot and bringing it over to the church plot. It was quite a chore to get the thing all back together again. I labeled each board so that we would be able to put it back together just as we found it. And here you can see it's starting to take shape. And we have the thatch roof with the reed walls. And that's the finished product there. My own Christian assembly. In Setswana, we are known as Intloya Ifangheli, Christians gathered in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, this is my conception of what we would like to see built in the next little while as the Lord opens the door. But we do have a desire to be able to accommodate several hundred people. We need to have that open area, that courtyard area. We want to try and make that available so that we can actually put seats out there so people could see the speaker in the front. Because at conference time, we would easily get 300 to 400 people together, and we need to accommodate that. So as you can see, we have young people coming to our meetings. And this is a typical Sunday day during our service, our Sunday morning service. Now, we're only about 20 believers in fellowship, but we would have oftentimes many, many more people coming to the meetings. And these are some of the pretty faces that you would see. The children are just lovely. We really enjoy the children. And, of course, we try and teach them some of our courses that we have on this side of the world, like Deep and Wide. And usually a child is just rewarded with a small little sweet. That's all you give them, a little candy wrapped in cellophane. And that's their reward for doing well in school. And this is our Sunday school classes are outdoors in the shade of this tree at this time. Now, this class is taught by two sisters. My wife's involved here. Now, this class has actually doubled in size since this picture was taken, and we are needing to build something more suitable. And you can see them active to want to answer questions. There's a good face for you. They love getting their picture taken. It's amazing. You can just aim the camera at a bare plot piece of ground, and in about 3 minutes, you'll have 60 or 70 kids standing there in front of you. Now, this is Nicholas. We conscripted him to be our illustration. We are teaching Ephesians 6 about the Christian armor, and we nicknamed him Maximus Nicholas Ridiculous. And here we have transport. Just from our neighborhood where we live, we have probably about 50 kids that come from there to the chapel for Sunday school. So this is how we transport them like that. And so this was one of the reasons why we wanted the Marquesas to come, is because without us being there, both vehicles won't be used for transport. So we would have missed out on a lot of these kids. So we do two trips just to get these kids over to the meeting. This is Brother Dan with his load, and oftentimes we work together transporting children to the Sunday school. Now, once a year, we have what is called the prize giving, and we receive good used clothing, as I mentioned before, from kind Christians from this side of the world, and the good used clothing is sent over, and then we give it to the children at the end of the year as a reward for their attendance. So as the children are more faithful to Sunday school, they get a better and better prize. So here you can see all the children with their prizes. And it's a great way of helping. Some of these kids come from homes with very meager means, and we're able just to help in a practical way. These are ladies that have been coming to the meetings. None of these ladies are saved, but they are quite consistent in coming and listening to the gospel. There's a young man getting baptized here. This brother's name is Dada. He lives in a village about 2 hours from Maun. But he is faithful at coming to the meetings every weekend he's able to. And it's really exciting to see the dedication that this brother has displayed. And we just pray the Lord will preserve him and give him a good wife as the Lord opens that door. Now here's another brother who's in assembly fellowship. He trusted the Lord about 7 years ago, I think. And he's blind and crippled. And when he first heard the gospel, we were just going door to door with gospel tracts in the neighborhood. And he wanted to come. And so he had a little boy, one of his grandkids, led him. The little boy held on to one end of the stick, and the old man held on to the other end, and the little boy just guided him to where we were having the meetings. Of course, we started to give him a lift, and he is a great man. We really do appreciate him, and it's nice to see him there. Now, conference time. We get together 3 times a year for a national conference, and that's when believers from throughout the country will meet together in one place, and we're able to share in the ministry of the Word of God and have fellowship together, and it's a great time. And we often, at times, we've had to travel about 600 miles one way to the conference, and we go there for a weekend and then 600 miles back. So it's a great task to do, but it's rewarding. Of course, when a good number of people get together, they need to eat, and the kind sisters in Sarawe they cook the meal for all the believers, and here you can see the big black pots brewing over the fire, and this is one of the delicacies here. This is called sesua, and what this is either beef or goat. It's in big chunks and put in the black pot, and then it is cooked over a long period of time, and it just simmers, and then the meat's really tender, then it's all bashed up like this with a stick, and that's always the man's job to do this, and that's what it looks like there, and it's actually a very tasty dish. It has bones and other things in there that you sort of leave to the side on the plate, but it's very tasty. Now, correspondence is a big part of our work, and Karen is busy trying to keep in touch with people on this side of the world. Incidentally, I just want to make mention that we have noticed that some people would like to receive a quarterly newsletter from us, and there is a piece of paper on the back table back there. If you would like to receive one of these newsletters, put your postal address down and your email address, and we will send you it by email. If you don't have an email, we will use the post. But put both down in case the email fails. We will then send it through the post. And if you only have post, just use that, and we'd be glad to send it to you. It's something we send just every 3 or 4 months. Now, some of the work that we are involved in is in the prison. The prison is really just at the end of our road. And this is an opportunity to preach the gospel to the prisoners, but also to the prison officers. And for about 8 or 9 years now, maybe even 10 years now, I've been going to the prison every Tuesday morning at 7:30 in the morning, and I teach the scriptures to the prison officers. The country is wide open for gospel preaching, either in the schools, the prisons, all over the hospitals, the open air. It doesn't matter where you are. People are very respectful, and they'll give an ear as you preach the gospel. Now, we've seen some blessing. There's a man in the middle at the back there, without a hat on. He trusted the Lord about 3 years ago, and just a couple of months before we came over to the U.S. here, we conducted a funeral, and that man and myself, we shared the preaching of the gospel at the funeral. And it was a real encouragement just to see how this man was developing. Now, we use also literature in our work. We have a book table that is actually a very effective way of reaching the lost. And a lot of these books, as you can see, are published by Everyday Publications, EPI. Dr. Harlow has written a number of these books. And then what we've had them done is we've had them translated into Setswana, and that's what we would do. Here are some of the young people here with Nicholas. We would set up the book table. We could give away 1,000 tracts each in an hour and a half without any problem. And there is the books you can see in the background. We would sell the Bibles and the books at a reduced rate. And it's a good opportunity to get out with the gospel. Now here is a just a sign of the Okavango in the wilderness that we have right on our doorstep. And this is where a lot of safaris are based. They come into Maun, and then they just go off into the Okavango Delta, where they're able to see some of the wild animals that we have in our country there. Now, the Okavango is really a river that starts in the highlands of Angola and flows and empties out into the Kalahari Desert. It never, ever reaches the ocean. But before it empties into the Kalahari Desert, it forms this great delta called the Okavango, and it is a tremendous oasis, a haven for all sorts of wildlife, as well as rascals like this guy. They're a lot of fun if you don't mind being harassed, because if you set up a tent, and you know they know how to sidetrack you, and they'll get you looking one way, and his partner and brother and sister will be in your car taking everything they can. I one time bought a really expensive box of vitamins, and he stole them from me, and he's up in the tree there, opening up, chewing him up, spitting him out, and looking at me, you know. We have more bird life in Botswana than all of North America altogether. And we have a tremendous amount of different birds. This is a Carmen bee eater, and this is a starling. Several different species of starling we have. It's a great paradise for bird watchers. Of course, we've got lots of crocodiles as well. And we have a river that flows right through the village of Maun, and it has crocodiles and hippo in it right there. Now, one time we were out in the bush. This is just out in the wild, and you can see the bull bar of my truck there. We're just really close, and out pops this leopard out in front of us, and we followed that leopard for about a mile down this road, and eventually he scurried off into the bush. But it was just amazing to see how close we could get to the wildlife. And this was very interesting too. One time we were with our sons, and we were driving along the bush, and they were all sitting outside the truck, in the open truck, and all of a sudden I hear them say, "Dad, stop, stop, stop." And then the doors opened quickly in the truck, and they were inside. I said, "What's the problem?" They said, "Look." And here this lioness was sitting right beside us. We never even noticed her there. Now this is one of the nasty things of Botswana. It's called the black mamba. It's one of the most dangerous snakes in the country. Can you just focus on a little bit? Its name in Setswana is two-step. And that means that's about as far as you're going to get if you're ever bitten by one of these things. Now, they have a reputation for being very aggressive. They're sort of a snake that will hunt you down if you happen to be in their territory. And we've watched them before from the vehicle. And they move like lightning in the bush. And they have their head is above the grass. So about a third of the creature is above the grass, and the other two-thirds is what moves it, propels it along the ground. And anyways, this one here, we came in contact with it through the brother Dan in Galuka. We call him Dangerous Dan. That's the other elder in the assembly. He one time was traveling down the road, and his little boy had to go to the toilet, so he stopped on the side of the road, and he went outside there, and he was taking a while to finish his business. So Dan went out to see what happened, and he saw this black mamba. So he quickly got in the car and started traveling down the highway. And as he looked out his rearview mirror, the black mamba was chasing the vehicle down the highway. So he turned around and ran over it two or three times, and then brought it to our house, because he knows our boys like to skin them and make belts out of them. So there we are. That's a black mamba. Of course, we have a giraffe as well. We have one of the largest herds of African elephant in the world, or in Botswana. There's about 100,000 elephant in the country, and they are really big creatures, and they present quite a challenge if you happen to meet one on the road, and he's standing in front of you. And we've had it happen where they would sort of get angry with you, and they'll throw dirt on the truck and blow their horn and wave their ears at you and start running towards the truck. And normally, I'm a fairly reasonable, calm fella, but my wife isn't. And she was going absolutely nuts. And what you have to do when a situation like this is you're supposed to keep calm and rev up your engine and keep creeping up into the elephant. And as you rev your engine, he was supposed to back down, and that's what he did. So it works. At least it did that time. Lots of hippopotamus in the river as well. And we do have some smaller creatures. Incidentally, there are some jars at the back there on the table on display of all sorts of things. There is a scorpion back there as well and a bunch of other little creatures. And you just go ahead and have a look if you like to. We've got all sorts of other types of bugs too. This is a really strange looking thing. I sort of like bugs. I like looking at them anyways. Now, this bug actually has a venom that it squirts out its back, out its behind its shield. And if a cat or a dog wants to play with it, it will squirt that venom into its mouth, and it causes the animal to start foaming at the mouth, and he gets really irritated by it, so they leave him alone. But just, he's quite a creature. There's a big, good close-up of him, eh? Of course, you have big frogs as well, with insects that size. Now, what we like to do is go fishing now and again, and we go up into the delta, up in the panhandle of the delta, and we rent a boat and we go fishing for a couple of days. And this is Andrew, our oldest. This is the type of fish we're looking for. This is the tiger fish, and you can see why they're called a tiger fish there. And they're really quite a good catch. They give you a real good fight. Now, this is just a small one here, and as you can see from this picture, there's an African fish eagle, and we're traveling along the boat, and he saw that fish, and he was hungry. And that's taking it right out of your hand. And this would be our last picture for this evening. Some warthogs. Thank you very much. If we could have our lights again. I'm sorry I kept you a little late. I just want to very quickly give you some requests for prayer. We are presently on our way with our youngest, Nicholas, who's not with us right now. He stayed at Boca Raton Chapel. And he will be going to university in Canada. He was accepted at the Royal Military College of Canada, which is the Canadian version of West Point. And so he'll be studying there. And I just ask that you pray for him as he adjusts himself to the type of, you know, lifestyle on the Western world here. He was 5 years old, I think, 4 or 5 years old when we first went to Botswana. So of all of our boys, he's the most African. And I think we'll probably find the adjustment the hardest. But if you would just pray for Nick and that he would make the transition quite smoothly. Remember to pray for Joe and Ramona as well, as they are trying to maintain the work over there. Not that we're dependent on missionaries, but it would just, they're helpful with the practical side of things, driving, transporting children, as well as some of the preaching in the assembly. And another thing that I would just ask you to pray about is we have a little issue right now with my health. The last 4 years, I've lost a lot of the ability that I had recovered when I first got over meningitis, and consequently, I'm having to use a stick again for walking. And I'm finding especially the right side, my right leg in particular, is quite numb, and I don't feel it very much. So we do have an MRI booked when we arrive in Canada, and we just would really like to see some recovery again. I don't know exactly what the Lord has in store, but we do know that if things continue to proceed as they are, I will probably be in a wheelchair in a short time, because it is getting worse. And a wheelchair is going to be a bit of a problem in Botswana with all the sand, and unless they come up with a four-wheel drive one, but I will find it rather difficult carrying on the work that we're involved in if we have to resort to that thing. So we just ask that the Lord would be kind to just give me some ability, and if if whatever the problem is, that the doctors will have wisdom just to identify where the problem is. Now with that, I'm just going to ask our brother just to close in the meeting in a word of prayer. And we want to just thank the assembly for having us. We enjoyed very much your fellowship and the hospitality, and we look forward to many more times of being able to enjoy your company.
Father, we thank thee tonight for another opportunity to assemble together and